which is why we took the sacrament today. The Lord knows that we have need to be reminded of the path that we're supposed to walk and the things that He has promised us. And that's what we have an opportunity to listen to tonight. And so I'd ask that you would take a moment and clear your thoughts and open up your heart to hear what we would be presented with tonight. The Lord sees our need, and He knows those things that we stand in need of, and He is always quick to give it to us. So with that, I would ask that you'd give our brother Andy Brown your attention.
Thank you, Adam. As I come here this evening, it is with, mixed emotions and mixed feelings. As I oftentimes do when I'm called upon to occupy this place. Oftentimes I feel my own weakness as an individual, as a human being, both spiritually and physically. The recording committee here always wants to know what the title to the sermon is, and I oftentimes have a hard time coming up with that, what the title is. But in this particular case, the title to this sermon was The Start, and that started upon my heart a couple weeks ago, And so I want to remind us throughout the course of this evening that life is worth living. That this life that we're given is worth living. It's, as a song we just sang, we don't always understand. We don't always know what's going to happen, how life is going to play out. I've said from here before, life is not a spectator sport. But we must all be participants. Sometimes I wonder if myself of this generation and the generations that's gone before me is really doing a sufficient job of passing the beautiful, wonderful gift of the gospel of Christ and the hope that it offers onto the next generation. Or are we saving it just for ourselves? So partly this evening, that's what I want to talk about. I want to talk about, and as I thought about life is worth the living, my thoughts were drawn to several individuals in history, in the scriptures, and more modern history in our own country here. And I thought, well, you know, I be in this day and age of Google and the internet, I just look on the internet at some of these names that come to my mind. And read some history on them, and maybe I could use them as an example. I found out some pretty interesting information, but nothing I necessarily wanted to use as an example. We know that General Lee in the Civil War was kind of on the wrong side, depending on where you lived. But, I mean, as it turned out, he was on the wrong side. But yet, uniquely placed in history for the purpose he served. I believe he served a purpose in the changing of our nation and some of the things that needed to be changed that was displeasing to the Lord. I was looking at some of the quotes that he had, Robert E. Lee, and one of the things he said, "My chief concern is to try and be humble, earnest Christian." That was his chief concern in life. And you could tell by some of the stuff I read about him that, indeed, that's exactly who he was. When Virginia seceded from the Union in 1861, he was strongly opposed to it. He didn't want to have nothing to do with it. But because of his loyalty there, he went and did what he did. And like I said, I believe that he was prepared for that time in history. And there's many stories about him and his faith and his honor, and how he was a good man. And I thought, well, what a on the opposing side of that, we might say, was General Grant, who wasn't a very nice guy at all. He was kind of a drinker and a rabble rouser and a difficult guy to get along with. And but he also was placed, I believe, in history to fulfill what he needed to do in his generation. You might say, well, where are you going with that? Well, I find it interesting in people I've known in my own life and people in history, you know, General George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, the guys we like to quote in history, that was driven to accomplish what was on their plate in their day and age. And so I look at this in my own life and in our lives and say, are we driven to do what we do? Do we have a greater purpose in life than just obtaining the next shiny bauble, whatever that is for you? Obtaining the next fancy thing that we want, the next easy day on the beach or whatever it might be. Or do we have a greater sense of purpose? And I'm here to tell you that each and every one of us in this room that have a knowledge of the gospel of Christ should have a greater purpose. There should be within us a drive to accomplish. Not stuff for ourselves, but whatever the Lord would have us to do in this path. Most of you know my dad. Kind of a swiveled up, old gray-haired guy. Really, really hard of hearing. And getting pretty stoved up anymore. Andrew and I was in the mountains yesterday and swung by his house to stop and see him. And he had an old pair of jeans and t-shirt on. He heard us out there banging around, come out to see what we were doing. How he heard us, I don't know. He must have seen us because he normally don't hear us. I asked him what he was up to. Oh, I've been splitting firewood. And he takes me down there and shows me this pile of firewood he's got split up, you know. And that's pretty much his existence now, you know. But sorry. Certainly, he lived in a generation that that men were compelled to accomplish. He doesn't talk a whole lot about his military experience, but he was in the Second World War and then again in Korea and was a prisoner of war. And I thought many times in my life, and I'm not trying to glorify my dad, I thought, you know, what motivates a guy to continue in those kind of circumstances? What motivates you to continue to struggle without food or, excuse me, in poor conditions? At some point, it'd just be easier to die. I want to tell you another little story. Many years ago, probably about the time Deb and I was going to get married, or maybe a little bit before, my dad and I went deer hunting, just the two of us, off down over here in Bloody Basin. And we hiked out from camp several hours and seen some nice bucks, and I shot one of them. And any of you that know anything about deer hunting, once you squeeze that trigger, then the work begins. And it was probably 9 o'clock in the morning, and we we get a field dressed and decide we're going to start packing it back towards the truck. Well, at dark, we were still packing. And I'm here to tell you, long before dark, I was ready to give up. We'll let the coyotes have this one. You know, not my dad. Full steam ahead, you know. At twice my age or three times my age at the time. And I thought about that later. What gives individuals that drive? And how do we capture that drive in our walk today? Like I said, I'm not trying to glorify my dad. He was made a lot of mistakes in his life, like most everybody. You know, but how do we incorporate the gospel of Christ into our life as a motivating factor to live life and is worth the living? That's really my message today, is life is worth the living. And especially for those, you know, we live in a day and age where we see people commit suicide and we see people on drugs and doing all kinds of things that they're in seeking of happiness or of satisfaction, but they're not finding it. And yet you and I have peace and life handed to us right here in front of us. It's here. It's for the taking. All of us have a knowledge to some degree or another of it. I want to read in James in the first chapter in the second verse. A few verses there that are pretty familiar to all of us. The book of James, chapter 1, verse 2, it says, "Brethren, count it all joy when thou fall into divers temptation, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. But let patience have its perfect work, that ye may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. If ye lack wisdom, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, who giveth to all men liberally and abradeth not, and it shall be given him. But let him ask in faith, nothing wavering, for he that wavereth is like a wave of the sea driven with the wind and tossed. For let not this man think that he shall receive anything of the Lord. A double-minded man is unstable in all his ways." This verse of scripture I've thought a lot about recently. We're going to have temptations. We're going to have struggles. We're going to have trials in our life. It's just the way man is. It's the design of God. What we do with them is up to us. It says, you know, if you have temptations, you have trials in your life, you know, let it work patience in you. And let that patience have its perfect work. And we, in the fifth verse, we in the Restoration like to know this verse as a verse that is in our history, but I think it's important for us today that if you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, who giveth to all men liberally and abradeth not. God's not just playing. He's serious. That if we lack wisdom, he'll give it to us. And we have to believe that. If we don't know which way to go, he'll give it to us. But then James puts a little bit of a requirement on that. And he says, you know, let him ask in faith, nothing wavering. For he that wavereth is like a wave of the sea. And we've all watched the ocean and the waves come in and they go out and they kind of do whatever they want in different heights and different directions. He says, but a double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. And the seventh verse is the one that really kind of struck me, and it's something I want to talk about this evening. And it says, let not this man think he shall receive anything of the Lord. If we can't be stable, if we can't be continuous, if we're like a wave of the sea, we take off that way. Think, oh, the Lord's going to bless me this time. And we take off and go back the other direction. Oh, the Lord's going to bless me this time. He wants you to stop. The Lord wants you to settle down. and be serious about seeking His wisdom, about seeking His blessing. Because, you know, I said, if you lack wisdom, well, I think all of us from time to time lack wisdom. He said, you know, let him ask of God. Don't run off. Don't run off with an idea and you're going to make it happen and the Lord's going to bless you in it. I think the Lord always blesses us. But if we truly want direction, truly want direction in life, if we want to learn how to live life and make it worthwhile. You know, I've heard Adam and some of the others here who are police officers, you know, talk about guys they meet on a daily basis. I've mentioned in the past, you know, we work these guys who are rental laborers, you know, they're just day laborers. You pay them at the end of every day. We don't, but the agency they work for does. And they may go get a bottle of wine or they may go fishing or whatever, but they have no direction in life, most of these guys. A few of them do. It's just a side job for them. But I've wondered, even to the point of stopping and talking to some of these guys. I get a guy on my job, 55, 60 years old. How'd you get here? How did you get to this point in your life that you're living in a hotel room that you pay day by day? You don't have a car. You have no family. How'd you get here? You know? No direction. It's like a wave of the sea, just wherever you happen to wash up. You know, and for those of us, we have to live with purpose. We need to live with determination, with direction, and that direction given of God. I have some strange verses of Scripture tonight that I thought, you know, I don't know how these are going to fit together. I hope the Lord figures this out by the time I get there. In the book of Isaiah, in the 14th chapter, I'd like to read a verse or two. We're going to start there in verse 12. It says, how art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which didst weaken the nations? For thou hast said in thine heart, I shall ascend into the heavens. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit upon the mount of the congregation in the side of the north. I will ascend above the highest clouds. I will be like unto the Most High. Yet thou shalt be brought down to hell, to the side of the pit, and they that see thee shall narrowly look upon thee and consider thee, saying, is this the man who made the earth to tremble and did shake the kingdoms? And I thought about that verse there, and I'm not even sure why I was drawn to it. But Satan has been cast down for our sake. You know, this battle in the heavens, Satan was a loser. He lost. And we know he has power on the earth today. But we also know that the end of all things, he's going to be down in the bottom of that pit. And, you know, those that look upon him and say, is this the guy who caused the fall of nations? Is this the guy who troubled me so and beset me so? And the reason I want to read this is, you know, with this purpose that we have in life, has to come a knowledge that Jesus Christ is the victor. He's the champion. He's the winner. And for those of us that follow him, we also can be the victor. We don't have to wait around in the mud hole, down in the mess that Satan creates for men. We can be the victor through Christ. We can be the one who is steadfast, who is lifted up by the power of God. I want to read a verse, and I think I may have read it the last time I was here, but I thought it ought to be read again. And that's in 2 Timothy, in the first chapter, verse 7. only. It says, for God hath not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. You know, I look at some of these individuals who have gone before us, and they didn't have fear. I've found over the years that when I make a decision out of fear, it's always the wrong decision. It's always the wrong decision. That's not to say that I might be afraid in a moment that the train's going to run over me, so I'm going to jump off the tracks. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying that when we make life's decisions out of fear, we're not facing life. We're not using the tools that God has given us. He says he's not given the spirit of fear. You know, I don't know if it's true or not, but I had heard, maybe clean back when I was in school, that General Lee, when he sat on the battlefield, oftentimes would sit in the open, you know, and his men would tell him, get down, someone's going to shoot you, you know. He said, you know, I'm confident that my life is in the Lord's hands. I'm confident that my life is in the Lord's hands. He didn't fear that tragic ending because he knew whom he believed in. And wasn't fearful that he was able to preserve him, to accomplish the things he needed to accomplish. You know, today we lost a dear brother. And I contemplated that this morning early when I got that message before we came to church. And I thought then, you know, knowing the condition of his heart, his physical heart, that you know, he's had many years already that perhaps was above and beyond. I feel like the Lord blessed him with more years already. And of course, as most of you know, our brother Bill, I feel like he fit this description. That he looked at life worth living, and that he wasn't afraid to make decisions, business decisions that were large business decisions. He wasn't afraid to enjoy life, to ride fast on a motorcycle, or to, I'm not encouraging that, but I'm just saying, whatever it happened to be that in his life he desired to do. And I feel like he had a confidence that the Lord was with him. And he was successful in business and in life. Not perfect, okay? We realize none of us are perfect. But he was successful in life because he looked at it not from the couch, but as a participant. And that's my encouragement for each of you this evening, and perhaps especially to some of these young men and young women who I think in our society today have been trained to be spectators. We're a generation of people who like to be entertained, and when we're being entertained, that makes us a spectator. And so I'd encourage you to lay hold of life. We don't know how long it's going to be for, and it doesn't matter. If we improve our time while we're here, if we magnify God in our time while we're here, that's all that matters. It's 20 years or 50 years or 100 years. It doesn't matter. If we magnify God, if we accomplish what the Lord's purpose for us is in this life while we're here, that's all that matters. And for each one of us, it may be something different. It's going to be something different. Part of this, my thought lately and recent months have been about when it comes to passing this legacy on and trying to describe to someone why. Why should you live a life, a godly life? Why should you grab hold of the law of God and place it in your life? Why should we trust in the Lord to be our shepherd? You know, in this day and age, we don't know something. We just ask Mr. Google. You know, I can be sitting in my house there, and a question would come up about, well, what year did the Civil War start? I can guarantee you within seconds, if Jesse's there, he'll have the answer. Okay? He knows how to use his phone really fast. You know, we live in a day and age of knowledge, of understanding, of strength. You know, I was listening to a guy who's a multimillionaire. He makes envelopes, a company that makes envelopes and ships them all over the world. And he's a very successful businessman, self-made businessman. And he does a lot of talking about how to sell, and he's written books and all this, you know. But I forgot what I was headed with that. This guy is a man who was started out with nothing, and has built his empire into all over the world. And he goes around giving these speeches on how to sell. I was going to make a point about that, and I don't remember what it was. Oh well. See, I didn't write it down. I hadn't thought of it until just now. I'll think of it in a minute, and I'll say it, and you guys won't understand what I'm talking about. But let's go to my next verse, and then maybe I'll think of it. Oh, I know what I was saying. I'm sorry. That happens to you when you get older, see? I can't imagine what's going to happen to me when I get older. When I'm trying to talk to people about why, We want a desire. Why do we want to share the gospel, the good news of the gospel? Because in this day and age, like I was saying about Jesse, you know that pretty much everything is provided for us by our society. You know, we dial 911 and Joel shows up at the door, a fireman. You know, if we're sick, we go to the hospital, whatever it is. And I think as a people of God, as believers, we have to be able to present to those around us that it's not just about this life. It's not just about this life. You know, I may live out the remainder of my days in the comfort and convenience of this United States. Everything at my fingertips, you know. And if I need something, it's just a phone call away, except imagine one of these days I won't even have to dial the phone. I'll just tell it what I want. It's almost there now. So there's a reason that we need to be able to communicate this on to those around us. And that's life more abundantly in this life and life eternal. Let's look at 2 Timothy in the 4th chapter. And we're going to read in the 5th verse. I think I'm in the right place. There we go. It says, "But watch thou in all things, endure affliction, do the work of the evangelist," and this is Paul writing to Timothy, "do the work of the evangelist, make full proof of thy ministry, for I now am ready to be offered, and the time of my departure is at hand. I have fought the good fight, I have finished my course, and I have kept the faith. Henceforth is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day, and not me alone, but unto all them also that love his appearing." Then it says, "Do thy diligence to come shortly unto me." And you know, Paul here was really saying, you know, I know my time here on earth, it's wrapping up. I can see the handwriting on the wall. I'm going to be finished here before long. But he had a faith and a hope. He says, "Henceforth, which is laid up for me, a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me. Do we pronounce, do we proclaim this hope that we have? Do we live daily with a hope of something to come? Or is it all about this life and we kind of forget that, thinking, and I've even said it, you know, I've said in the past, you know, I don't study a whole lot about the resurrection of the dead or eternal judgment because I feel like if I just live right, I'll be able to witness that firsthand. But I think sometimes that might be a mistake on my part, and that is that, you know, I need to be able to share the hope I have in the life to come. We need to not only be a witness of a greater life while we're here, but to share that, you know, do I have this conviction in my heart that, you know, that there's a crown of righteousness, a crown of glory laid up for me, and I'm going to stand before that judge who is Jesus Christ, and he's going to give it to me on that day? Do I think about that? Do I have that hope in my heart? Do I think about where I'm going to be the day I leave this life? You know, I thought it strange, but yet appropriate, that our brother Bill got up this morning, just like any other Sunday morning. Got dressed, getting ready to go to church. He's going to go see the Lord. Unbeknownst to him, he was going to go permanently. You know, that's a beautiful thing in my sight. That's a beautiful thing in my sight. The question is, are we prepared to do that? Are we prepared to stand before the Lord and to find rest in Him? Do we live daily with that? Am I passing that on to my sons, to those around me, that I have this hope that I'll receive a crown of righteousness whenever that day comes? I'm not going to prepare tomorrow or the next day. I'm prepared today. Let's look in the book of Revelations. Because I think that living, part of this living with purpose and living with a hope of things to come, but yet we can't be too far that away either. You know, if my entire life is just focused upon the hereafter, how am I being a good witness of today? We need to be able to proclaim how God in your life can help you today, and have a hope of you're going to be with Him tomorrow. Another familiar verse of Scripture, the book of Revelation, chapter 21, starting in verse 1. It says, "And I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and there was no more sea. And I, John, saw the holy city, a new Jerusalem, come down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a great voice out of heaven saying, Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and He will dwell with them, and they shall be His people, and God Himself shall be with them, and be their God. And God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes, and there shall be no more death, neither sorrow nor crying, neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things have passed away." Do we have a hope in that thing to come? Is that our true hope in life? That we're going to be standing there someday in that holy city, where there's no more of the troubles or heartaches of this life, no more pain in our back or our shoulders, no more heartache because of the people around us or because of our own sin? Do we have a hope in that? Do we have a focus in that? Is that shown forth in our countenance when we talk to people? I hope so. And I hope that, you know, I too just was a week ago at the youth camp, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I have a desire for these young people to take 100% grasp of the gospel. Not just a little peace, not just enjoy the fellowship, and oh yeah, it's fun to go out and outing, and it's fun to go to youth camp. That they take 100% ownership of the gospel. That you have a place in the church today. It's not tomorrow, it's today. And that you have a hope in these things that we're talking about right here. That you have a hope in a life hereafter. Even though it may seem a long ways away, we don't know. If you live to be a ripe old age, it's still just an instant. Time goes by way too fast. Just ask any of your parents or your grandparents. Time goes by way too fast. I want to read a verse. I'm almost finished. In the book of Moroni. Right near the end. Chapter 10. It's right near the end. It is the end. Verse 31. And this is Moroni kind of making a conclusion to his writings and to his thoughts. And it says, "And now I bid you farewell. I soon go to rest in the paradise of God until my spirit and body shall again reunite and I'm brought forth triumphant through the air to meet you before the pleasing bar of the great Jehovah, the eternal judge of the quick and the dead." You know, just by this comment that Moroni made, we know that he had an absolute hope in the resurrection. He had an absolute hope in the life hereafter. And I might even say he had a knowledge, an understanding. Do we today think like that? Do we think when we see an old friend or we're talking with someone, do we project a belief that Jesus Christ is everything in our life? That He's the thing that motivates us, that He's the thing that moves us off the couch, that He's the thing that strengthens us in the most difficult circumstance of life. You know, I mentioned my dad was a POW, you know. I can't imagine what that means. And I've read some stories, and I know that John McCain, we hear a lot about him and when he was a POW in Vietnam. And some of the things that these guys went through, what motivates you to continue on? You know, it has to be something greater than ourselves. It has to be something stronger, bigger, more important than myself. And it has to be Jesus Christ. It has to be a hope in the hereafter. And it has to be that we're convinced that we have a purpose. Today, now, in this life, that we have a purpose in the lives of those around us. You know, we have some brothers who aren't here today because they're off preaching the gospel in Mexico or Honduras or Africa or something. That's a pretty good-sized purpose, huh? You know, my purpose might just be to affect my family, my friends, my relations in an extremely positive way and bring a hope to them and to their families for another generation. That's a good purpose. But we have to be about it. We have to be actively about it. And hopefully when that day comes for us that we can be like Moroni and say, you know, I bid you farewell. I'm good with it. I'll see you when we stand before the bar of God and be glad to do it. I hope this is our purpose. I hope this is our desire. And I hope that we're convinced in our heart, young men, young women, that we're convinced in our heart that these things are true. And they're just as true as the air you're breathing right now. And very important, just as important as the air you're breathing right now. That's my message for tonight. Thank you.